Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Nice message. We'll come to those messages. 51551 is our text. Oliver at RTE.ie is the email. Good morning, Marion Keyes.
Good morning, Oliver.
Are
Callan.
You okay now? Are you comfortable and everything?
I am.
And you know, you've no tea or
I have water, thank you.
I hope someone offered.
They did, of course. Okay. They did indeed.
That's actually something we could even know about you, the fact that you turned down the tea or coffee.
Yeah,
you?
I have one cup of coffee in the morning and that's
so it's
it.
Done now.
Yeah, yeah, because okay. It's not for health reasons or anything. It just makes me feel a bit sick and then I can't sleep.
It's a health reason, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
How do you take your coffee then in the morning, would you?
A little bit of milk.
A little bit of milk. Oh, so you have a black coffee with a little touch of milk into it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do you mean like you have a fancy coffee? No.
Okay. That's you for the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of similar. I get a bit dizzy, actually.
Yeah, it's not good for me, really. It makes me feel... Yeah, like if it made me feel nice, I'd have loads of them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, that is very much my brand.
That's a good point. Come here to me. How are you, because you're a few weeks in now with the new book, how are you with the panto of interviews and the promotion and maybe explaining sometimes what you do
no,
and
I'm
reviews?
I'm grand now. I'm grand. The worst of it, not the worst of it, but the bulk of it finished about 10 days ago. Yeah. And then, as always, I always get sick the minute I stop.
Do you?
Yeah, it's kind of nice. Do you know what I mean? It's something that felt like COVID, but the tests were negative.
Oh,
so, I mean, I got to spend a week in bed, sweating and sleeping. And I knew I was coming to see you today. So over the weekend, I started kind of making myself be well. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, right. Yeah. You've a chore to do, so you better
No, I need to be back to kind of be in the flow of life again. Mm. So I started then with the fizzy vitamin C and zinc over the weekend. And so now here I am.
That can be very nice, actually, can't
it? Do you know what?
Childhood-like.
Yeah. They have a new flavour of the fizzy vitamin C.
Right.
You know the way it's always been just orange
and
lemon, which I don't like either of them. They have elderflower now. They have notion-y vitamin C.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
So it's kind of a watery-looking one. And
well, it's
colour.
Kind of like a pale green. No, it's very
it's
nice.
Yeah, it's a nice colour.
Yeah, you could put like maybe a slice of cucumber in it or something. and a straw maybe. You know, and suddenly like it's a festive occasion.
That's right. And we were supposed to be, isn't there's an or in the month. So May would be the first month we can stop taking vitamin C.
Oh, really?
I wouldn't risk it. At the
oh, God, no, not at all. Not in this country. Or the vitamin D. Like the vitamin D isn't that the sunshine vitamin?
Oh, yeah, we need that for sure.
Yeah, but like you're meant to take it during the winter months. But in Ireland, I would recommend taking it year round.
Are you a good patient now when you're sick and sweating the bed?
No, I am the worst.
Right.
You know, I lie there yelling for things, you know. I like to eat my way through any discomfort.
Okay. Do you eat in the bed?
Oh, good God, yes.
Oh, I don't know about that now.
Oh, it's the best.
I'm going off you now altogether.
Oh, I mean, and I would often find crumbs. I'm happier.
Find them later, would you, the crumbs?
Oh, yes. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
God.
No, I'm never comfortable with anything pristine. I like it to be sullied, you know, because then I can sort of relax. Then it's like, okay, right, the damage is done. I can enjoy myself now.
I have to clean a plate like when I'm finished.
Oh, okay, so right. I'm the opposite. I am the absolute opposite.
One of those people.
Yeah, I am the opposite of whatever you would call yourself, like a clean freak.
Yeah.
You know, I'm one of these people who kind of goes around muttering that we wash ourselves too much. And I have to say, like, I do know my duties, you know, as a civilized person in a civilized society. Like, I do. But I'm always giving out about American soaps where people are always just going to take a quick shower. It's like, Stuart, you're grand. You've had four already.
Yeah,
and
it's only
half 10
afternoon.
In the morning. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, settle.
What are you, Bob Dylan?
Yeah, something exactly.
10 times a day or something, I think. Once
oh, really?
I wonder, did he get over that? I don't know. He does so few interviews, we'll never find out.
We'll never find out.
He'll
yes.
grumble one day.
That's it. He'll write a groany old song about it. Yeah, I went to see him in The Point, whatever it's called these days, some years ago. And it was like he had the dry heaves all the way through it, like I don't know, he didn't make much of an effort. That's
wretched.
Exactly it. Yeah, it did. It sounded like he'd enjoyed the day before, and he'd come then to do his concert. So I feel he was not a communicative man. So we'll never know about the overwashing.
I'm at Nolan Park in Kilkenny. And you might be 3 minutes of the song and go, oh, yeah, I know this one.
Yes.
Because he's kind of changed the way he plays.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Like, how are you getting away with this?
We've
paid in. We've travelled to Kilkenny.
I know. I have to admit, I left at the half time.
Did you?
I just couldn't be, but it was just not pleasant, you know. And at this stage in my life, if I'm not enjoying it, good luck.
I know. God, I've nearly forgotten to do the interview.
Sorry, Solomon. Right, go on.
Will
go on.
You? Are you following where it is in the charts, by the way? Is that the thing you do? Are you too many novels in at this stage?
Well, no, no. I'm always, it's always, any time before a book comes out, I am always waiting for, I don't know, a backlash or just a lack of interest.
Which at this stage now be?
But, I mean, I think the longer you do something, the more likely it is, in a way. Because, I mean, I don't mean this in any kind, like, people have been so good to me and my readers have been so supportive and loyal. But, like, fashions change. You know, what people like, it moves on. And I'm changing. And it just, people have their time, you know, and that doesn't last forever, no matter what we're doing. I don't mean this in a kind of a pessimistic way, but yeah, people have their time in the spotlight and then inevitably that wanes. So I'm always very grateful that people have bought any books. But yeah, I was...
Shakespearean there.
Really?
The actor who struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more.
But that's exactly it. I mean, it's for any of us, like, no matter what we do. I was delighted. I'm absolutely delighted.
It's brilliant. You've sold thousands and thousands. You're still number one in Ireland at the moment on our recent chart. And you're doing battle with David Nicholls.
I am. Were you talking to him?
We were chatting to him here a week or the week before. Yeah,
yeah,
when the book
he's
came
coming
out.
To Dublin.
He is, to
and
this
I'm
festival.
Interviewing him.
Oh, it's your chat to him. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
And you give a lovely blurb to the book.
Oh my God, it's a great book though.
Yeah, it is really good.
It's his best book.
It is. I actually read it and I thought it almost felt like a Marion Keyes.
Thank you.
I was reading and
thank you. Well, he
her.
Writes love stories.
Yeah. Funny love stories.
Funny love stories, but he's a man.
He is, yeah. And the male characters tend to be stronger as a result.
Yeah.
But it's unusual to have a man who gets to write books for women like that.
It is.
I think, what do they say? Women love it and he makes men cry, something like that.
Is that right? Well, I mean, I do think he writes about the vulnerability of men very well.
Yeah. You have a couple of vulnerable men in this one, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I mean, the in my more recent books, I've become far less binary about how I view men. Mm. That they're either, you know, in my earlier books, they were either terrible human beings or they were like, you know, the savior, the you know, the man who comes in and fixes everything, and and now definitely my male characters are far more nuanced.
Particularly because you were talking there about how people change, and I'm fascinated by this because we meet someone, we maybe know them from school or college or for a short period, and you just create the character for them.
Yeah,
and you freeze them there.
That's exactly it. Yeah, because the people I've written about in My Favorite Mistake are in their 40s and 50s, and they've known each other for a very long time, and definitely our idea of who a person is crystallizes around the time we first met them.
Yeah.
And it's very hard in those long sort of friendships to change, or for a person to change and be re-accepted, you know, or to say, like, I was not a good person then and I've worked very hard and I'm trying and now I'm different and better and please see me as I am now. So, yeah, I wanted to write about, you know, the fact that we all do terrible things, all of us, no matter how well-intentioned we are, and that we can do better, but that it is frustrating when people won't see us as having made those changes or trying or living, behaving differently.
Yeah. And it's also something we should probably remember about ourselves, that other people have crystallised the character
of who we are.
Of who we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I mean, yes, of course. And that's also difficult if we feel like, I mean, I think most of us do. Most of us look back. I mean, OK, I look back at my earlier years, or not even that earlier, like 10 years ago, 15, 5 years ago.
Right.
And think, I did things then that I really regret. And if I knew now, you know, back then, I wouldn't have done those things. But
of course,
life doesn't work that way. And it's about how do I manage those shames or those regrets. And in a way, My Favourite Mistake is very much about managing.
It is, yeah.
And kind of forgiving ourselves for our humanity, because we're all human beings and we are all flawed. And there is nothing, once we've made our amends as best we can to the people we've hurt, then it's about the bigger job of forgiving ourselves, which is an awful lot harder than forgiving others, I find.
I know. I mean, sure, if you ever get out of bed at all, you're going to make mistakes, aren't you?
Completely. Like, it's inevitable. We're programmed that way.
Although now that I think of it, some of the mistakes are in the bed.
Some of the, if you're me, exactly. Although I wouldn't consider them mistakes, do you see? I would consider them happy times. So it's, in a way, it's about how you view an act.
Are you thinking of sort of an excruciating moment or an excruciating time or thing you did? And what do we do then when we're now grown up, whatever age of grown-ups we are?
Yeah.
You just sort of have a chat with yourself, sit down in an armchair?
Yeah, have a chat with yourself or have a chat with somebody else or maybe do something symbolic like write a letter to the person you hurt, even if it's yourself. And then, I don't know, maybe burn it on the outside of the house if at all possible. But to do something to kind of just say, look it. I'm flawed because I'm human and so is everyone else. And I suppose to try and kind of keep it in perspective as well, you know, that you didn't do X, Y and Z, which would be miles worse, for example.
And you're going to make more mistakes.
Oh, that's the awful thing. That is the thing. Yeah, yeah, it's true. And again, I'm not able to avoid those things. And I suppose all I can do is, like, once I've done them, to not double down on them, but to kind of try and do better, or to go back and apologise. That the power of an apology is so underrated. It's just a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Like, it cleanses my soul, and it also kind of opens up, you know, clearer pathways. It means that for the rest of my life, I don't have to see that person and then run away down a dark alley, hoping that they haven't spotted me. You know, it's hard to apologise, but it is so worth it.
It's hard to apologise and mean it. Is that fair to say?
Well, I suppose it involves that thing of kind of humbling yourself, you know, and thinking, oh, okay, right.
Here I am. Did the thing.
Yeah, I did a bad thing. I wish I hadn't.
But there's good value to it.
There's great value. Yeah.
I mentioned when I was introducing earlier on that there's loads of milestones going on in your life.
Oh, yes.
Congratulations on 30 years sober. I think it was
Thank you. Thank you.
Is that a huge moment? That must be a big moment.
It is a huge moment. I mean, at the same time, it is just one day at a time. Mm-hmm. It is just for today. But there was something about looking back at 30 years and seeing how dark my life had been in the final years of my drinking and just how much goodness and love and, I don't know, pride and lack of shame that there has been in the 30 years since. You know, with the caveat that, of course, I will continue to make mistakes because even though I'm sober, I'm still human. And so much goodness has happened. Mm. I mean, mostly in terms of relationships, because I couldn't feel love and I couldn't give love. Not when I was mired in, you know, active addiction and the whole self-obsession aspect of active addiction. So it has been so nice. Mm. And the fact that I'm aware of it makes it extra nice.
Of course, And the amount of people you've helped, even just talking about
it. Oh, God, I mean.
Extraordinary. And Rachel's holiday.
Oh, thank you. Do you know what? I've only ever talked about myself, you know, and I never wanted to be one of these, do the way I did it, you know. I mean,
of course,
but it has been such a, God, it's been lovely to think. You know, because I do hear mostly about Rachel's holiday, you know, people who got sober or got clean, or else they understood people in their lives who had been maybe their parent or, you know, a spouse or child who had been through addiction and they had always blamed themselves that they should have tried harder or it was their fault that they made them be that way. And that they, you know, now they understand that, like, there was nothing that they could do. And that has been incredibly, what's the word, nourishing.
Yeah.
Knowing that, like, just by writing a book about, you know, the kind of the inside of living through addiction, that it's had that effect on people.
Yeah, it's lovely. I mean, you've told so much about yourself over the years, whether it's the addiction, depression, the menopause more recently you've been talking about as well.
Yeah.
Does that help make all these novels more personal?
I mean, it's not anything I've ever set out to do. I mean, I have no boundaries and I never had. You know, I never had as a child. I didn't understand that there are things you don't say to people. And that I just always thought if somebody asked me a question, that it was only mannerly to answer it. I know that's kind of weird. And then I also think if I write about something and I'm then promoting the book, it's... I mean, again, plenty of writers don't do it, but I would rather give my my side of things, or, you know, the research I did, and mostly, I mean, the research I did for addiction and depression, I lived through it, and also menopause. But like, for me, I mean, in my favourite mistake, menopause is part of Anna's story, but it's only a small part. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to kind of go, well, you know, it happens to 50% of the people, of the population. And it is kind of grim going through it. And we should be talking about it more. Yeah. And but let's not overdo it either, you know. I would just like it to be a sort of a normal thing.
It is. It's just casually in there. But it's obviously very important to her because the doctor's is mansplaining. Going, yeah, you don't need the HRT.
I know. I mean, that happens to so many women.
I didn't know that type of side to it.
Oh, my God. I mean, women are so infantilized when it comes to, like, their health. Mm. I mean, especially when it comes to reproductive health. You know, like childbirth. So few women get any say in how they really want it done. And this, I mean, with menopause, so many women have been told, you know, we're over medicalizing something that, like, women have gone through since the dawn of time.
They sat there quietly in their house coat.
That's it, yeah. It's breaking plates and like shaping their beard, do you know? Whereas, you know, we didn't have antibiotics for a long time. And we didn't have anesthetics. And, you know, I'm delighted about general anesthetics, you know. If I'm going to have my leg amputated, I'd rather go with the medicalization approach. And it's just, you know, somebody who hasn't lived through it and who never will, I don't really think they have any right to tell somebody who is going through it and who knows their body and their mind very well. They have no right to tell them what they should or shouldn't do. You know, women are able to make their own minds up about what choices they make regarding their own health.
It's a legacy of men running this whole area, isn't it?
For as long as
we know science.
Well, I mean, you know, at the risk of saying patriarchy, we live in a patriarchy. Yeah. The world was built by men for men. And it wasn't built to accommodate women. And, you know, now women are saying, we'd like to say how it is for us.
Yeah. Would the world have been saved by more feathery strokers in power?
Yes, it would. It would. Okay, people who don't know what feathery strokers are. It was invented by my sister Katrina and her friend Anne-Marie Scanlon. And feathery stroker is about this was invented in kind of the early part of the century. A feathery stroker is a man who takes you to bed and, you know, he strokes you all night in a very feathery, gentle way. And he's, you know, he's very loving, very respectful. And that's all well and good. But there are people I know who would rather be flung around the bed and have a, you know, maybe an item of clothing torn. But feathery stroker was like, you know, when people would rather be kind of pile driven into a headboard, a feathery stroker was a terrible, terrible insult. Yes. And it was like became to kind of mean men who were good to their mothers, or men who went to Pilates, you know, or men who noticed that you'd had your hair cut, you know, and it became this sort of very you know, that they were just way too kind of sappy and gentle for their own good. But I think times have changed, and I'm all for a feathery stroker. I want a man who notices that I've had my hair cut and who is good to his mother, and, you know, and who will eat a dessert that isn't cheese. Do you know, who is kind of in touch with his feminine side?
I think the world wants, we're kind of putting them on pedestals at the moment, aren't we?
Oh, there's absolutely.
Paul Mescal, who looks like he would do the aforementioned, but also there's a touch of the feathery stroker.
Oh, and there's nothing wrong with
soft men with muscles.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, they are the antidote to kind of toxic masculinity. You know, yay for the feathery strokers.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break and loads of messages coming through. I'll come to those in a second, but we'll chat after these. Oh, I was going to actually ask you what you're watching. We're with Marion Keyes, by the way, best-selling author, and because I wanted to ask what you read, because you read so much.
I do.
Two or three at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I'm swatting for David Nichols at the moment because I'm interviewing him. But I just started reading the Gabor Maté book, The Myth of Normal, which is non-fiction. He's a doctor who's written a lot about addiction, and he's just so compassionate. Yeah. It's just a new way of looking at it.
And what else have you got? A couple?
Let me
see. Something you might have enjoyed. I'm putting you on the spot.
The new Vary McFarlane is coming in June. I love her books.
You have it.
Pardon?
You have it already.
I have it. I asked her for it. Yeah, oh, I'm in the lucky position that because I know other writers, and if I hear something is coming, that's I can send it to me, good woman.
And do you watch a bit of telly as well?
Oh my God, I live for telly. So I've just finished watching The Morning Show, the third series. My God, it just went batshit bananas by series three. I mean, it was, the first series was so good, and then it just went more and more insane. But in a way, I was there for it.
This was your illness watching, I presume.
Yes. And watching Ripley, watching One Day Again for the David Nichols swattiness.
The movie or the series?
No, the series. A thing about fancy hotels in India. Oh, stop.
Oh, that sounds great.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's the Oberoi Hotels. Oh, listen. Yeah, I'm there.
Have you been to India?
I have been to India a long time ago. Yeah, I'd love to go back.
It's supposed to be amazing.
Oh, it's just wonderful. I went on the trains. Go on the trains if you go. Yeah, people go for like 3-day train journeys, you know, to get from somewhere in the north to somewhere in the middle. And it's just wonderful.
Oh my, that's magical. So that's what you do.
The time off.
You've got your own Netflix thing, of course, happening.
Yes, I have. It's
another milestone.
I'll get you right. Okay, milestone. Yes, it's Grown Ups, my second ago novel. Yeah. And it's going to
be a big novel.
Yeah, they all are, though. I mean, Jesus, I try not to, but they all come out big. But yeah, there's a lot of people in it.
No one's complaining.
Yeah.
A lot of people. So is this going to be a series or a film?
It's series.
Oh,
yeah, it's going to be
justice, yeah.
six different episodes. And I've seen their treatment in the first episode, and it's so good. And they're going to film in Ireland, and I'm hoping that it'll be an all-Irish cast. And we could have Paul Mescal maybe if he'd do us.
Yeah.
He could be the feathery stroker for Ferdia.
He'd be so good at
Yeah, he'd be an excellent feathery stroker, wouldn't
he'd
he?
Be amazing,
and we could get the chain its own... what's the word? Credit. Yeah. And its own trailer.
Finally.
Yes. Finally. Yeah. And its own makeup artist and everything.
Series.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
The other milestone I want to talk to you about is your house. Your house has been so important to you over.
Yes.
For so many years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I lived where I did in Dunleary, as you know,
for
27 years. But a year ago, I saw a house in the paper, and it was just the oddest thing. We'd wanted to kind of live in a modern house, and we'd lived in a Georgian house for a long time.
Bridget's fault in the novel.
Yes. And we just, I don't know, it's just one of those odd things. Because of our age, because I turned 60 and himself is 61, we kind of thought if we're going to move, we should be doing it before we're too decrepit to kind of, you know, make new friends and a new community and everything. So we saw this house, and I just got a horrible feeling in my stomach and thought, we're going to live there. I know that sounds, but I just was aware of all the upheaval and...
Oh, yeah, of course. It was just the most stressful thing in your life, isn't it, moving house?
Yeah. I mean, the most stressful thing was like seeing what came down from the attic. It was like there was a hole, an opening to hyperspace up there. Like just the amount of rubbish that just kept on coming. It was like being funneled in by the universe, like stuff going back like 30 years. I think, I cannot believe I exchanged money for this. And the utter mortification of the whole accumulating thing. So at the moment, I'm very like, we'll give it all away, give everything away. And we did, we left most of our furniture and stuff behind.
You?
Yeah.
So completely fresh.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a romantic way to pick up a newspaper, a physical newspaper.
Yes.
I go, there's the home I want to go to.
And then the minute, the first time we went there, I just knew it. I'd often heard people saying that the first time I walked in, I knew it was home. And I was like, yeah, me granny. Do you know, like you've got to check, like, are you near the bus? Are you near the dart? Like whatever. But it's right. Do you know, it's right.
So it's really ultra modern, loads of glass.
It's ultra modern. All straight lines and corners and glass and no attic. So you can't store. So that'll keep a
limit.
Will
you throw up wallpaper and nice things? Because you love
passion, I do. It is. It's very funny. I have already started filling it with colour.
All fuchsia.
A lot of fuchsia, a lot of blue and green. Yes, Oliver, yes.
Well,
you know me well.
Thank you.
Is it still
somewhere in Dublin? Not looking for the air coach.
No, it is in Dublin. It's sort of Ballantyre, Edmundstown.
Really revealing.
Yeah.
That's gorgeous. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
To yourself and himself.
Thank you.
For that. And we've covered all the milestones now.
We have. My 60th birthday. Did we do that?
Yeah. And Keanu Reeves featured on buns or something.
Yes.
Sorry, I should say cupcakes.
Yes.
That sounds
cupcakes.
All wrong.
Cupcakes. Yes. I mean, I wish it was Keanu Reeves, but it was pictures of him going, what does he say in John Wick? yeah. So they had him saying that. Do you not watch? Oh my God.
Did you watch the John Wick? Oh, we're obsessed.
Oh my God, I love it so much. I often watch it to cheer me up. You know, like other people might watch, I mean, I do watch Paddington as well when times are bleak. But an old John Wick's.
With all the violence and everything.
I love it, yeah, because of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Oh, he's amazing.
He is just, he's gorgeous, isn't he? In every way, he has a good heart.
He is. He's just one of the good people.
He really is.
A feathery stroker for sure.
Utter and total.
But he can kick things in the face. Yeah, that's important.
I know. He's just the perfect man. He's an all-rounder.
He is. Through the headboard and out through the other wall.
Yes,
he?
Exactly. And out into the street. Yes.
Now you're talking. That's a real man. That's a great place to be. Our last break. Oh, we'll have to say goodbye to Marion Keyes, but loads of people, and we're sorry to all the lovely people sending nice messages.
Yeah, I'm really sorry, and thank you to everyone.
Orlin Cork and June and Galway and Pat McLaughlin and Nora and another Marion actually sending in lovely messages. I'll read them to you afterwards.
Thank you.
Okay? Lots of people asking about your podcast with Tara Flynn.
Yes, it's called Now You're Asking. It's on BBC Sounds. Podcast. And it's, we help people. You know, we're not really agony asks, but mostly we bring our own shambolic lives into play. And we're gearing up for series 4.
Oh, that's great news.
And we just love doing it. And we're so grateful for all the people who listen.
And I love how you sometimes almost explain to the British audience what you're talking about in the Irish way, but not quite. Let them look it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, we have to go, but Marion Keyes, thank you so much.
Thank you for having
the,
me.
The International Literary Festival thing is on the 23rd of May. Will you be talking to David Nicholls? That's blockbuster.
20th of May for David, 18th for me, which is 2 weeks from last Saturday.
Very good.
Or one week from next Saturday.
Thank you much. Have a lovely day, everyone. Bye-bye. Salam.